谁呀？啊！ That's very good. Hello, I'm Dr. Cosmo McKinley. I'd like to tell you about a new film from the gang that gave you the Rocky Horror Show. Shock Treatment.
I'm not a locum with no to suture myself. I've been a cynic for too many years. Playing doctor and nurse, it can be good for your health. I've seen clinics with those gimmicks in Tangiers. But if you open your heart to a smooth operator, he'll take you for all that you've got. He'll hand you a curse that'll be with you later. It'll shake you the way he takes off like a shot. You need to beat him. Get you jumping like a real live wire. Need to beat him.
Ooh, shock treatment.
So look out, mister, don't you blow your last resistor for a fister that'll mystify ya. Jumping like a real life wire. You need a bit of
Ooh, shock treatment.
So look out, mister, don't you blow your last resistor for a sister that'll certify ya.
You'll be pathetically crazy about shock treatment. Trust me, I'm a doctor.
Hello and welcome to Unloved Sequels, the podcast that brings you a blow-by-blow critique of Hollywood's worst-rated sequels. You know, the ones that some people think should never have been made. We're your hosts. Michael, say hello.
Hello.
And I'm Claire. This episode, we're visiting the town that doesn't just love television, they live it. Michael, I have been looking forward to this episode. What's the movie?
This time we're covering the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Not a sequel, but an equal. It's Shock Treatment. We're back with Brad and Janet, the crazy engaged couple from the Rocky Horror Picture Show, but as a bored married couple. But this time they get held captive on a reality TV show. Da, da, da!
I love it.
There's so much to say about this film.
So there is so much to say. Go on, start us off with the nuts and bolts. Talk us through the usual budget and stuff like that. Come on.
Okay, so Shock Treatment opened on my birthday, October the 30th, 1981. I was only 1 year old when this movie came out. It opened at a very, very, very small release. 100,000 theatres across America. So quite a small release, didn't go massive. It was re-released as a midnight movie. It never received a full theatrical release. It's never been constantly played at a reasonable hour at a reasonable time. They tried going in with the whole, how Rocky Horror found its fame with midnight showings. It had a budget of $3.5 million. That was an increase of Rocky. Rocky Horror Picture had a budget of $1.4 million. So it was kind of like $2.1 million more. And they thought they were recreating the world of Rocky Horror Picture Show by making this movie. There is no figures found to how much this movie made. I cannot find it. I read somewhere once, a very long time ago, about this movie, and that somebody suggested that it made in about 330K or 300K. It really underperformed.
Wow. I mean, I read that it made less than Rocky Horror. Yeah, but not hard, because actually, although Rocky Horror is quite niche, it's been continuously running for about the last 45 years.
But even at the 40 years, it's still only made up to date of $226 million. So a film that's run for 40 years, most midnight showings in small niche theatres across the world, $226 million is still not a lot of money for that showing. Like for a film that's run for 40 years, it's really made back its budget. Really, but it's taken a long time to kind of like get those numbers up. You know, movies today can make $200 million in one weekend,
for sure.
So it is quite a big difference. But Shock Treatment did not go on to become a cult classic like Rocky Horror. So it was kind of like seen as a massive flop. No one really knows how much money it made during those few midnight showings. But even during those midnight showings, I'm sure other theatres that didn't have Shock Treatment were just showing Rocky Horror during Halloween, like the eve before Halloween, probably. And they're like, come see Rocky Horror. It's comfortable. People like it. People can dress up to it. It's like, it's not like that's the one thing I found about this movie, is that if you want to do midnight showings and dress up as the characters from it, go and buy a nurse's outfit. It's like, doesn't have that elaborate...
Yeah, the look is not as iconic.
Yes.
In this, as it is in Rocky Horror. Rocky Horror, you could see someone completely out of context walking down the street in Rocky Horror cosplay, for want of a better word, and you would know exactly what they were doing. Whereas there isn't really anyone in this movie that you could, any character that you could do that with, that you could dress up as them and walk down the street and someone would go, oh, you're that guy from Shock Treatment. No, it just wouldn't happen.
So the top grossing movies of 1981. The biggest grossing of the film was Indiana Jones, The Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah. Then a movie called Golden Pond, that I didn't know what that was. I thought it might be, I was a bit like, what?
On Golden Pond, I haven't seen it, but I've heard of it.
And then Superman 2, Arthur, Cannonball's Run, Chariots of Fire, From Your Eyes Only, Time Bandits, and Clash of the Titans. Now, I've got a little quiz here for you. I didn't just mention, I'll give you a clue. I didn't mention this movie just now. Okay. Do you know what other sequel came out the same day in 1981? Do you want another clue?
Yes, of course I do.
Okay. The first movie in the series was a sleeper hit too and became a cult classic.
Is that it? That's what I'm getting.
No? Another clue?
No, yeah, go on.
Okay. Another storyline in the same franchise concludes this October.
Another storyline in the same franchise.
Yep.
This October.
With the same leading actress.
I feel like, and the way you're staring me down over Zoom, I feel like I should, the penny should have dropped by now and I might be about to get disowned.
You are going to be disappointed you didn't get.
I don't know. Go on, put me out of my misery. It's not misery.
Halloween 2. Halloween, misery is not a sequel.
No, I know. I was just being funny because I said, put me out of my misery.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But Halloween
2. Of course, yes.
The Halloween 2 came out exactly the same day, on that date, and the budget...
But the thing is, I think we probably need to bear in mind that I don't think this movie was trying to compete with any other movie.
No, but you've got to look at it. So, okay, hold that thought, what you're just thinking, okay?
Okay.
So Halloween 2 had a budget of $2.5 million, went on to take $25.2 million at the time, big numbers, okay? Correct. Also released that day was a family-friendly comedy called Saturday the 14th, which was like a spin-off and spoof from other horror movies. That went on to make a $4 million at the box office, not as big as Halloween, but still did quite well. A plastic surgery horror called Looker, which took $3 million at the box office, and a cult classic horror film you've probably never heard of called Madman, which is another slasher, which took $1.3 million at the box office that week. Now, why would you stay up past midnight to watch a loose sequel based on two people that do not react when you can go and see any of these four movies during any time of the day? Why would you wait until midnight to work? It's such a mistake for them to release that film then.
Well, I wondered when I saw that it got a Halloween release, why? Because I know a lot of people associate Rocky Horror with being a Halloween-y type. I personally don't. For me, it's not a Halloween film. This is a year-round experience, as far as I'm concerned. I'm a big Rocky Horror fan.
Because you're a crazy fan?
No, enthusiastic. Enthusiastic.
I would say crazy, but okay.
It's been said before about me. But it's for me, it's not a Halloween movie, but I do appreciate that for a lot of people it is. It does have the word horror in the title. Yeah. And is kind of working with that kind of B-movie feel. Mm. And it is putting itself into that category. I get that. This film doesn't, though. There's no horror element to this film.
Nope.
It's not trying to be a B-movie. It's so different from Rocky Horror in that respect. There is no need for it to have a Halloween release.
Barry Humphrey's contour lines are quite terrifying.
I mean, that's pretty scary. That would give you nightmares. Do you know what? I did have some weird dreams last night.
Did you?
After watching that movie, so maybe it was.
It's
a scary movie.
I didn't see it as a horror movie, and I was a bit. I thought it was a mistake for them to release it that side, because also it was a time when they could have cashed in on doing more midnight showings at Rocky Horror that other studios were showing this. You know,
they for sure. And then use those to trail this.
Yeah. Well,
surely. And then release this later.
Well, they had a promo, a tie-in promo for the TV. When this film got released, they did a TV promo tie-in to it. And it was called the tie-in. They changed Squiff the title a little bit and called it the Rocky Horror Treatment.
Oh.
To really confuse the freaking audience.
That's cynical.
It is. Oh, to go back to the... Okay, I forgot to say this before, guys. But to go back 2 weeks previous to this release, another cult classic came out that is a comedy horror. Evil Dead, the first Evil Dead movie.
Mm.
So Sam Raimi, and that was a massive hit as well. So I'm like the box office was rammed with quirky horror films for people to watch. And
I yeah,
think it didn't fix the mold that they wanted it to do, you know. But Claire, do you have any behind the scenes stuff for us?
I do. And I'm going to apologize to you, Michael, and to everyone listening now, because it's quite a lengthy production story on this movie. Okay. I'm going to be as quick as I can, but there's a lot to say and I like to talk. So if it's getting a bit much, just nudge me along.
I'm anyway. Lucky I've got a coffee here and I'll just sit back and listen. And I go occasionally.
If you reach the bottom of the mug, just tap it against your microphone and I know it's time to stop.
Okay. I might run off and poop halfway through.
I'm hoping I'm not going to go on for quite that long. So the story of this movie kind of dates back as far as 1978, which is when Richard O'Brien started working on a sequel to Rocky Horror Picture Show. Now, at that point, it was going to be a true sequel. It was going to be called Rocky Horror Shows His Heels. And in it, Brad and Dr. Scott have become a couple. And yep. they have developed a way to resurrect Rocky and Frank using virgin blood. Where they found a virgin from, I'm not quite sure, but they did. Meanwhile, Janet is about to give birth to Frank's baby. So I guess we're not that far after the events of Rocky Horror. We're talking within a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so Riff Raff and Magenta come back to Earth to kidnap the baby, is the premise of Rocky Horror Shows His Heels.
Yeah.
But Jim Sharman, who was the director of Rocky Horror Picture Show and worked on the screenplay with Richard O'Brien, wasn't massively keen to revisit the same kind of material as the first movie. And also Tim Curry did not want to reprise the role of Frankenfurter. So between those two things, that kind of kiboshed that idea. I'm very glad that they didn't decide to recast Frankenfurter and make that movie anyway without Tim Curry, because I don't think that would have worked.
You can actually get online, so interrupt you, Claire, but you actually can get online on a lot of fan sites an actual rough script of this. Of this one.
I haven't found that.
There is a script out there called Return of the Old Queen.
Oh, yes. I did hear about that.
That has a slightly squished story. It kind of like goes along the storyline you just mentioned. But in this story, Brad's brother, Steve, seeks revenge on the aliens in the first film after Brad becomes a Las Vegas go-go dancer.
Yes.
And falls to his death from a trapeze wearing only 6-inch heels and a rhinestone choker. Also revealed is Sonny, the illegitimate son of Jack. Janet and Frank, like you just mentioned, and heir of the throne of transsexual. The script never made it past early drafts, but has been put online, and you can read it. You can find it on many Rocky Horror fan sites if you want to go and find it. It's quite an interesting read. Go on, Claire. Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's fine, because actually that kind of leads into the next bit of the story, because I hadn't read that script, but I have read, I've skim read the original draft of what became next from that. So basically, Rocky Horror Shows His Heels got scrapped, but Richard O'Brien had already started working on the songs and he was happy with the music he'd written. So he basically reworked them into a new concept. The first draft of that was called The Brad and Janet Show, and it's not too far removed from the movie that we see. The big exception is that Dr. Scott from the first movie was going to be in this movie. He was going to be playing the manager of the TV station, in very similar role to the one that became Bert Schnitt, the Barry Humphries character. Jonathan Adams didn't want to come back into this movie, so that's why they reworked the character and turned it into Bert Schnitt. Susan Sarandon, in terms of other returning cast, Susan Sarandon was starting to kind of take off with her acting career by that stage. She'd been relatively unknown in Rocky Horror. Things were picking up for her. So she was approached to be in the movie to play Janet, but she asked for a fee that was out of budget. Apparently she asked for $1 million, which wasn't within the movie's budget.
Yeah.
So she did not come back. Jessica Harper then took on the role of Janet. So we've got this weird thing with these two movies that there's some returning characters, there's some returning actors. There's only one actor who returns playing the same role as he did in the original movie, and that is Jeremy Newson playing Ralph Hapshatt. There are various other characters who return. Betty Hapshatt and Brad and Janet come back, but all with different actors. We've got various actors returning. We've got Richard O'Brien. We've got Patricia Quinn. We've got Nell Campbell, who is credited in the first movie as Little Nell. We've got Charles Grey. We've got quite a few of the Transylvanians from the first movie coming into supporting roles, but they all play different characters. So it's a bit of a weird mishmash of what gets carried forward from one to the next.
But do you not think, sorry to interrupt you again, but do you not think when they got to this point of Susan Sarandon wasn't coming back, they were recasting Brad, when they got to that point, why didn't they just go, why don't we just change Brad and Janet's name and just make it a different film?
Because this is purely my opinion. This is not based on any actual piece of information I've read.
Hang on, let me get Rich O'Brien on speed dial just in case he doesn't like what I'm saying, because he is opinionated.
I was going to say, my guess is because Richard O'Brien wanted to make a movie about Brad and Janet. So he made a movie about Brad and Janet. So with Barry Bostwick, he wasn't available. So that's why his part was recast. Now, ironically, Clifty Young, who came in and played Brad in this movie, had been the original choice to play Brad in Rocky Horror Picture Show, but wasn't available. So then they brought in Barry Bostwick to take the role. So when Barry Bostwick wasn't available, the first call they made was to Clifty Young, and they just offered him the role outright, is my understanding. However, according to IMDb, so it must be true, Tim Curry was also offered that dual role of Brad and Farley, and turned it down because he didn't think he could manage the American accent. Now, that sounds a bit shonky to me, because we've seen him in other movies with American accents. I think he maybe just went, do you know what? I'm not there anymore. Maybe he didn't want to do it. Maybe he was busy. Maybe he was just being polite and didn't want to say, I don't want to be in this movie.
He probably knew that it was going to flop and be like, I don't want anything to do with this.
Maybe. But so he's not in this movie. We have Clifty Young playing Brad. I'm more inclined to believe the story that he was offered the role outright rather than that it had been offered to Tim Curry. That would have been weird, having Tim Curry come back to play Brad of all characters. And so I'm quite happy to ignore that.
I can't really have an opinion on this, because it took me until the end to realise that that was the same actor. I did not click the whole movie.
Spoiler alert, listeners. Spoiler alert. Brad and Farley are played by the same actor.
They've had 40 odd years to watch this movie. If they haven't watched this
yet. If you've not watched it by now, I mean, why are you listening if you've not watched it? And if you haven't watched it, stop, go to YouTube, because you can find this on YouTube.
You can, yeah, you can.
I realise I already owned it because, Michael, I think, bought it to watch this, not, and then realised it was on YouTube.
I did. But I can really highly recommend the new from Arrow TV, what's the UK company that re-releases old movies. Their new Blu-ray release is fantastic. It's packed with extras. It's so good.
Well, this is the thing. You've got extras on yours that I don't have on my DVD. No. I don't have any director's commentary. I'm quite upset about that.
Oh, it's so good. So
there we go. Are we up to speed on... Yes. So then the Brad and Janet show. So how we then got from the Brad and Janet show to Shock Treatment, the movie is set in Denton, Texas. They do a whole production number about it. They were going to film on location. Because that has taken me nearly a whole day to get that song out of my head. They were going to film on location around Denton in various different locations. So that opening number where they talk about how great Denton is, there was, you know, they talk about that there's a playground and there's this and there's that and the other. And it was going to be in all of these places and in their houses and, you know, show all the white picket fence and how chocolate box Denton is. And then there was a Screen Actors Guild strike, which meant that the American cast couldn't work in America during the time that was set aside for production. And they couldn't, because of cast and crew availabilities, they couldn't move production in time, so they moved production to the UK. However, there is nowhere in England, particularly in 1979, 1980, that looks like middle America, no. chocolate boxy, picket fencey. You can't find that in England. So that's when they came up with the idea to set the whole thing exclusively inside the TV studio.
Yeah.
And then, so then they reworked it and changed some of what happens and changed, and I guess it kind of changed some of the impact of the movie as well, because I think it, the fact that it's set entirely within the studio frames the movie completely for me. And that's how we ended up with the movie we have. In terms of canon, the first movie is not canon for the second movie. As you said at the beginning, and this is a quote from Jim Sharman, I think the director, it's not a sequel, it's not a prequel, it's an equal, is what they said at the time.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure. I mean, calling it an equal is one of the things that I think upset quite a few of the more intense Rocky Horror fans, because I think it's not an equal in terms of the quality of the movie. But what they're saying is it's like a parallel universe version of Brad and Janet, I think.
You know what? I would accept that more if Brad and Janet were at the same time in their relationship.
Well, this is the thing that I was going to mention, because actually for me, I didn't notice anything in Shock Treatment, although they've said that Rocky Horror isn't canon in Shock Treatment and there are no references in Shock Treatment to Rocky Horror. There was also nothing I noticed in Shock Treatment that conflicts with Rocky Horror having possibly happened.
No, exactly.
So for me, also, it could be a sequel. Timeline wise, it comes later because Brad and Janet are married. Ralph and Betty are separated. Ralph and Betty are the couple who were first getting married at the very beginning of Rocky Horror. So their marriage was the kind of catalyst for the whole storyline. By the beginning of this movie, they are separated and Brad and Janet are now married. And they're presumably out of the honeymoon phase because their marriage is starting to go down the toilet. So for me, I'm happy to consider it a sequel, even though I know that officially it isn't and the creators have said that it isn't.
Yeah, because I'm a bit confused. The one character in this show that really confused me was...
Just the one?
Well, a lot of it actually confused me. What the hell am I watching? The guy that is always with Ruby Wax and the guy with the white hair.
Yes.
He's the one who plays... He's the one that has the character in both the same movies. He's in both movies.
He's in both movies, but it's not the same character in both movies.
Right, because doesn't he play their...
Although there are theories that it could be. So he is the criminologist. You're talking about Charles Gray.
Yes.
Who in the first movie plays the criminologist, which is like the narrator role.
Yes.
And in this movie, he plays Oliver Wright, who is the object of Betty Hapshatt's affections now that she is moving on from her husband. Again, there's nothing explicitly saying that they're not the same person, but he's not the same person canonically. The only one that is the same is Ralph, her husband, who is the guy in the red jacket in Shock Treatment, who's paired up with the blonde bimbo. Yeah. The dumber they are, the blonder they are, I think, was Betty's line about it. Who did he play in Rocky Horror?
Explain his character in Rocky Horror.
The same character.
But what does he do? What scene is he in?
He's not in the movie. He's the groom in the wedding at the beginning.
But Ruby Wax isn't in the wedding at the beginning.
No, they recast her character.
Well, that's just, pardon my language, but fucking confusing.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So the characters of Ralph and Betty have carried through. Betty has been recast. Although I thought Ruby Wax was in Rocky Horror, but she doesn't have a credit for it. I thought she was one of the Transylvanians. I might do a little rewatch and see if I can spot her, because I'm sure I've seen her.
Spent all my young gay childhood going, Biggins, every 5 seconds.
It's Biggins!
I want Biggins!
Yeah, so she's not, as far as I can tell, in the original movie, although I thought she was, but in a different role. But Jeremy Newson, who is the groom, Ralph, at the beginning of Rocky Horror, is in Shock Treatment, in the same role.
But why doesn't he, in that case, have any interaction with Brad and Janet in Shock Treatment?
I think you're going a bit too far into this.
Yeah, but why? That's the thing that confused me. I would never connect that.
Well, this is the other thing. This is the other big difference between the original draft, the Brad and Janet show, and Shock Treatment, is that in the Brad and Janet show, Janet worked at the TV station.
Right, okay.
And so probably did have some interactions with Betty and Ralph. I'm not sure which one of them was friends with who in terms of the original storyline. I don't know if it was Betty and Janet were friends, or Ralph and Brad, or whether they all were, because they were all at school together, isn't it? Is the whole point. And then they go off looking for Dr. Scott. Yeah, so in the original draft, in the Brad and Janet show, Janet worked at the TV station. And that was part of the catalyst for the story. And actually, I think that's something that is missing from the final movie, is that in the Brad and Janet show, Janet has just been promoted at the TV station and Brad has just lost his job.
Right, see, that makes more sense.
Yeah, so I think that's a piece of context that I think it is missing, because it didn't get carried over into the final draft, but it makes the whole movie make a lot more sense if you know that.
Because Richard O'Brien has been known to say that he likes this movie, he's proud of this movie, he likes the music in it, but he hates the editing of this movie.
Oh, is that what it is? Because, he's said some very conflicting things about this movie. The whole not a sequel, not a prequel, it's an equal thing, he later retracted.
But he didn't say originally the director did.
No. But he went on record as saying that that is not how he sees this movie. He referred to it as an abortion, which is a very strong metaphor to be using.
It's Texas and Denver. It's quite on topic.
Wow. But that suggests to me that he didn't love the final product.
Yeah, I think he had a real problem with the editing, because the editing is shocking in this. It doesn't really make much sense. But I wouldn't say it's a structured story.
Yeah. As soon as you pull at a loose thread in this movie, the whole thing unravels.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Is the thing. There are a lot of things missing. And I think maybe because of that production process that they went through and having to change the movie so many times, maybe too many things got cut, like that bit of context with Brad and Janet and their work situations. The fact that it was all contained within the studio, which is something I really like about this movie, but it does remove... Again, it removes context. So, for example, the Bitchin' in the Kitchen song was supposed to be set in their house. He was in the kitchen. She was in the bedroom. Hence, the whole song would make sense. And they were singing to the things in their house rather than, because they had to move it into the studio, it got translated into some kind of weird... what was that TV show? Generation Game thing. Yes. Is that a thing in America where you have the conveyor belt and all the thing, the prizes that you can win?
I think it came from America.
And it kind of ended up being some weird, like, they're singing to the prizes in the game show. So it didn't quite work. So, yeah, I think, although for me, it does give it something moving into the studio setting, it loses quite a lot as well in that respect, I think.
I think it just, by putting it in the studio setting, you have to know what you're going in for. Like with Rocky Horror Picture Show, there's so many scene changes. Even though they're still in the house, every room in that house is different, and it's very large sets. It's very extravagant. It's very, you know, it's visually entertaining. This film is not visually entertaining. It's very basic. It's very stripped down.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I really struggle with. A couple of times I had to pause it, walk away, come back. Because it's very stripped down compared to Rocky Horror. So, guys, if you're going to go away and watch this, prepare yourself. It doesn't look or sound like Rocky Horror Picture.
No, that's true. That's true. But talking about the sound, can we talk about the music in this?
Oh, my God.
Because it is a musical.
Yeah, it is a musical.
And I'm a big fan, actually, of the music. I've been listening to it since I watched the movie. I've been listening to it as well as I've been kind of doing my school runs and things. And you were saying I just hear you say that your favourite song is Bitching in the Kitchen?
I love Bitching in the Kitchen. And you know, it's probably not correct for me to like Bitching in the Kitchen, because the actual lyrics of the song are quite pretty bad in today's world. But it is a catchy little tune.
Why are we always sooner or later? Bitching in the kitchen or crying in the bedroom all night. Everything used to be okay, but I've been had. Brad, I'm glad to say, is on his way. Micro digital awaker, why are we always sooner or later? Bitching in the kitchen or crying in the bedroom all night. Shower curtain,
wash those rooms away in the shower by
hand. Won't you help me to be certain?
I really like it. I really like the duet expression of it. And I really think it was great. I think it's a really, really great song. Claire, do you have a favourite song?
Well, I do, but only because I knew you were going to ask me, and so I had to pick one. So I've been listening to the soundtrack since I watched the movie, and it's each song that comes on, I'm like, oh no, this is my favourite. And then the next song, oh no, this is my favourite. Oh no, this is my favourite. But I think because they're quite varied in style, but I don't know about the in America, but in the UK, the soundtrack is on Amazon Music. And so if you have access to Amazon Music, have a listen to it. Even if you haven't seen the movie, if you like the music in Rocky Horror, I think you will like the music in Shock Treatment.
It has a country twist to it, but it's also free on YouTube. So you can listen to the whole soundtrack on YouTube.
Oh, there we go. And you might find some of the lyrics a little bit weird outside of the context of the movie, but I do think it's worth a listen musically, if nothing else. So my favorite track is Me of Me, which is the song that this is Janet's big kind of her move into egomania. And she's kind of finding herself as this kind of star that she's been pushed into the role of. And by the end of it, she's basically trashed the studio because she's just suddenly her ego has exploded. And it's all about her as far as she's concerned, which is what she's been set up for.
I love every part of me. All I can see in me is danger and ecstasy. One thing there couldn't be is any more me in me. This is the me of me. Me, me, me. Me, me.
So yeah, I really like that song. I really like all of her songs, in fact. I have to say, as much as I would have loved to have seen Susan Sarandon in the role, I think Jessica Harper is probably a better vocalist. Hearing her performance as Janet in the songs, I'm not sure how Susan Sarandon, based on what I heard her sing in Rocky Horror, I'm not sure how she would have coped vocally. But maybe they would have written the song slightly differently because they have different vocal ranges, the two actresses. You can hear that Jessica Harper has a much deeper voice. So perhaps they would have transposed the songs up a bit for Susan Sarandon. I don't know. But it's a great soundtrack. I think we should notable mention for Lullaby. We both really like Lullaby.
And you also like My Own Way, My Own Again. You quite like that.
In My Own Way, yes. I like that as well. I think Janet gets some fantastic songs. I like Look What I Did to My Id, which means nothing if you haven't listened to it, but have a listen. It's really good. Weirdly, I think the title track is probably one of the weakest songs. It's very catchy. It's been stuck in my head, but it's not, for me, one of the best songs on the soundtrack. But I do. But I still like it. I think it's a really good soundtrack overall. So
one thing I do want to mention is how before its time was this movie was.
Yes.
Because it's such a weird thing to watch a movie that came out in 1981 but feels more relevant today.
Yes. Like,
especially on the landscape of America, you know, kind of like looking at kind of like Janet's dad is very much a Trump supporter.
Oh my goodness.
He kind of like
has. I do like his song as well. I know it's really wrong, but I like his song.
I won't say the line that stuck in my head for days because it
was. No.
But it's that whole character is very relevant of how I see the outlook of very strong conservatives see the country. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Because they're juxtaposing the whole image that's being portrayed in Denton, USA, in the song Denton, USA, as this kind of white picket fence chocolate box. We're really tolerant of the ethnic races. That is a quote, by the way, because I know that that's not.
Because they even put a black family really on the cornflake box in the
show.
And like that would not have been seen until probably in the last 5 years. Like, you would never have seen a black family printed on a cornflake box today. Like, if you watch it, it does really tell the story of reality TV and the outlook of America in today's world. It's kind of creepy.
Yeah. Well, so I was going to ask you, because I don't really know what the landscape is like in terms of reality TV in America. Yeah. But like you were saying, it's it it's very weird watching this movie, knowing it was made 40 years ago. I first saw it probably about 20 years ago, which was just probably around the birth of reality TV as it is now. And I enjoyed it then, but then rewatching it for this, knowing how reality TV has evolved in the UK, particularly over the last 5 years, you watch it and there are some bits of it that it can be a bit chilling actually, because certainly in the UK, reality TV has kind of gone maybe a bit too far. And there's been a lot talked about in the last few years about how well the participants in reality TV in the UK are looked after or not. Yeah. There's been a few examples of people who've suffered really badly, particularly with their mental health, having been involved in reality TV shows in the UK, and then they've left the show and they've not had the right kind of aftercare in place to make sure they're being looked after. And when you watch this movie, knowing all of that, it puts a real different spin on it. And I think if this movie was made now, A, it would be a lot more popular. B, it would probably get a bigger budget and would be able to get the production values. But C, I think it would be regarded much more highly, and it would be a kind of social commentary.
And I kind of like I would watch this and I was like going, you could easily insert, because you know during the show they kind of like dip into other game shows drawing the actual backstory of the musical, so you can see what's going on stage with the audience. You could easily throw in a scene from The Masked Singer, and then you would think that's completely outrageous in 1981, and today it's one of the biggest shows on TV.
I know, and then you look at it now. Well, I still think it's outrageous, but I get it.
But Drag Race, or that show you have in Britain when Naked Attraction, that can easily be slipped into here. And
can you imagine, like 40 years ago, even Richard O'Brien would have said Naked Attraction was insane. So for the benefit of the American audience, in the UK, we have a reality TV show called Naked Attraction, in which it's a little bit like, I guess, a bit like Blind Date. Do you have Blind Date in America?
Back in the past before my time here.
There's a person is looking for a partner. They come on the show and then there are six booths that you can't see through. And inside each booth is a naked person.
Fully naked.
Fully naked.
Genitals on display.
And then bit by bit, the screen on the front of these booths lifts up. So first up, you see like up to the knees, then you see up to the waist, then you see up to the shoulders, then you see the full face, head, body, everything. And then you get to hear them speak. And in each round, the person who is looking for a date has to eliminate one of the people in the booths purely based on how much they've seen of their naked body. It is the weirdest concept in the world. It's been running for years. It's a really popular show. I think just because Brits love to see willies and bums and boobs, and it's weird. I don't know.
It's really weird. My mum watches it, so, you know.
I'm sure she does. I'm sure.
But I just say it's such a shame that didn't come out in the 90s, because I would love Cilla Black to do it. Could you imagine as that screen goes up? Surprise, surprise!
Surprise, surprise! The unexpected
hits you between the eyes! That would have been
entertaining. That's a very, very British reference, but oh my goodness. That's tickled me.
You can Google Blind Date and this program on YouTube. I'm obsessed with YouTube this episode, but it is a reality TV show. It does fit very well into it.
But this is the thing with this movie, and it's like, it feels like then when they made this movie, they were like, let's push the obsession with TV, because reality TV wasn't even really a thing in the 70s and 80s. There were some fly on the wall documentaries starting to be made about following families around their day to day lives. And there were things like 7-Up in the UK was being made. I don't know if there were equivalents in America, but there was none of this kind of constructed reality, which is what we have now, which is what this movie is. So clearly it feels to me like the production team on this movie were thinking, right, let's take this obsession with TV to its most grotesque possible conclusion.
We've gone past
and make the movie. And that's the world we live in now. 40 years later.
I think we've gone past. I don't think what they do in the show is that shocking. I think I've seen worse. Yeah, like the concept of putting somebody in a cage, or maybe injecting them is probably a bit step too far, but you know, pushing somebody's
And the suggestion, although we don't see it in the movie, the suggestion is, there's a whole song about it and it's the name of the movie, the suggestion is that they're going to give him electroshock therapy. We don't see that happen, but it's either happens off screen or it's on the cards, surely. But yeah, I find it really bizarre watching it back now, because I haven't seen it for a few years until I rewatched it for this, and watching it now with that awareness of where reality TV has come around to now.
Yeah.
It's not as funny anymore, because you look at it and you go, but this is not that far removed. And then you've got that kind of puppeteer character, that Farley Favours, up in his little booth, controlling everything and making it all happen.
But Claire, is there anything from this movie that you love?
To be honest, I really enjoyed almost all of it. I find it easier to talk about things that I didn't enjoy rather than things I did, because there's so much of it that I enjoy. I like the nods to Rocky Horror. I like that it isn't trying to be Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
But I like that they have included some nods. They've included some direct quotes. They're very early in the movie. Might actually be her first line. Janet says, "It's all right, Brad. Everything's going to be all right," which is a line from Rocky Horror. And then later on, once they're into the asylum bit of the studio, she says, "I want to see Brad." And then one of the doctors, I can't remember which one, says back to her, "But the question is, Janet, does Brad want to see you?" Which again is a direct lift from a conversation in Rocky Horror. I like that there was a little nod in the look what I did to my id scene. They've got a print of American Gothic, the painting in the background that they had recreated in Rocky Horror at the beginning of the wedding scene. I like that it's not explicitly not a sequel, but it's not kind of constantly going, "Oh, do you remember that crazy thing in the castle?"
Yeah.
I like that they don't reference it, but I like that it could still have happened.
That's what I don't like about it. I think I would have probably preferred an actual, really. I don't mind them playing different characters. I think that's quite fun, but I would have liked some Rocky Horror references.
Mm.
You know? I would have appreciated some Rocky Horror references. I felt like it was lacking that. And I think that's why it's gone on to kind of like non-exist in a lot of people. So I think a lot of diehard Rocky Horror fans of our age and younger probably doesn't even know this exists.
No. I mean, this film is not popular. As a generalization, this film is not popular with Rocky Horror fans. I think I am in a minority of being a Rocky Horror fan who also likes Shock Treatment. The irony, of course, being that the whole marketing campaign for this movie, they were trying to target that Rocky Horror audience. They might have been better off just separating the two movies and removing the associations and letting it stand on its own. And maybe it would have got a better response.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, so what bits did you, what did you like about this movie then?
I love Ruby Wax. I'm a huge Ruby Wax fan. So Ruby Wax was great. And even though I thought she was severely underused, I thought she was fun. It was nice seeing her on screen and playing a role.
But and again, this is quite early in her career. So we know because we've seen what she's done since, what she's capable of. But actually, she wasn't really very well known at this point. So
that is true. And also Barry Humphries. Though Barry Humphries went on to win loads of awards for being shit in this film, I thought he was great. I thought he was great. And I think the problem was I loved him in it. And he's just so off the wall.
No,
I really.
That's the one
him.
Thing. If I could change one thing in this movie, I would take him out of it, and I—that's the part that I would put Tim Curry in.
That's what I was thinking. Why, like,
if he was in this movie, why would you get Barry Humphries when? Which again makes me think maybe Tim Curry just didn't want to do it, because surely you would offer that role to Tim Curry than Barry Humphries.
That is the role you would give Tim Curry, but because I feel like even though he's not the main villain in it, he's the central villain for a majority of the film.
Yes.
You know, I feel like and I think the relationship between Richard O'Brien and what's she called? Patricia Quinn. They're like, they have the same relationship with Barry Humphries that them two had with Frankenwerter in Rocky Horror. So that would have been quite the organic role to give him.
Right, so you like Barry Humphries. What don't you like in this movie?
The existence.
I feel like there's a lot you don't like in this movie.
No, I do enjoy it. I enjoy it. It's a hard pill to swallow. I think if I was, I think I would enjoy it more within how people watch Rocky Horror. I think with this movie, you mustn't pay attention to it. I think it's one of those films that you would enjoy to watch with a group of friends and you sing along to the songs and you don't look at the structure of it as a film.
Mm-hmm. It's not finished. It's not a finished product, but...
No. And it's kind of like, well, I just... Like, I find it a slog sometimes. The two times I have watched it, both times I found it as quite a hard slog. But I do appreciate...
I apologise for making you watch this movie twice now.
That's okay. The first time, you know, the first time we watched it, we were much younger, and I was a big Rocky Horror Picture fan, and I still am. And I just wanted to live up to that expectation. We grew up in England. We grew up with Richard O'Brien. He was on a program called Crystal Maze, there was a massive.
I wanted to be on the Crystal Maze when I was a kid.
Do you think you're athletic enough to go on the Crystal Maze?
No, this is why I didn't apply for Crystal Maze, because I would have been rubbish. But I wanted to.
Yeah, so he was a big, in the 80s and 90s, he was really big within our growing up. So to see him in this, I feel like, and the work that I know he probably put into this, and for it not to be the final product that he wished it to be, I find pretty heartbreaking. And when I watch it, I just think about that, because I'm a big Richard O'Brien fan. And I just felt like that he didn't get what he needed from this movie. But I would have liked to seen the 2015 stage production of it, or when they got the rights. And if anybody out there went and saw Shock Treatment in the West End in 2015,
well, it wasn't at the West; it was at the King's Head in Islington.
Okay,
so when Richard O'Brien was approached for the rights to have a stage show created, he said yes, that he would agree to that. But the condition was that it had to be staged in an intimate venue in much the same way as Rocky Horror had been originally. So it was at the King's Head in Islington, and it was in spring 2015. And it completely missed my radar, probably because I had a baby in winter 2014. So I was still probably in a bit of a weird post-baby fug of not really knowing what was going on in the world around me. And it had a fairly short run. So I never got to see it. But yeah, if anyone did see it, let us know how it was.
I would love to know. I'd love to see pictures and stuff of it. Kind of like,
yeah.
Anybody's got any, like, a program or something, that'd be awesome to see. If you can send us pictures, that'd be amazing. So Claire, how many Shock Treatments would you give this movie?
I would give this movie, I'm looking at your face and waiting for it to drop, I'm going to give it 4 out of 5.
I'm sorry, everyone.
Silence. Silence from Michael. I've actually achieved it.
I see the balls of hay running through my mouth.
Now, I know that I'm an outlier in this. I know that this... I'm at a very extreme end of the curve in terms of people's reactions to this movie. So I think if you've been listening to this and wondering whether to watch it, you should probably factor in what Michael is going to score it as well as what I score it. But I think... It's not perfect. That's why I'm not giving it a 5. There are bits of the plot that are a bit confusing. It's not... I think if they went back to it now and gave it a bit of spit and polish and filled in some of those little plot holes and tightened up some of those bits you were talking about that are a bit like, does this need to be happening? What's going on here? It could be an amazing film, actually. I don't think that would ever happen, but I think if they made it happen, it would be a really good movie. Without that, obviously, it falls back a bit. But I can look past that because I really enjoyed watching it. And I went into it, I have to say, I went into it slightly nervous because it was my choice of movie. You did your rewatch before I did mine. And so I've been listening to your reaction to it. And I've been thinking back to the last time I saw it, which was, to be fair, the last time I saw it was probably with you 20 years ago. It's not a film I've seen many times. And I was thinking, God, have I made a huge mistake? Is this actually a complete turkey? Am I going to hate this movie? And I didn't. I really enjoyed watching it again. I really enjoyed the music. I had to hold myself back when I was researching from falling down too many little Rocky Horror rabbit holes on the internet, because now the internet is a thing, which it wasn't 20 years ago and certainly wasn't 40 years ago. I could spend the next few days quite happily researching this movie further, even though we've made the episode, because I'm a bit weird like that. So yes, from me, it is a 4 shocks out of 5 but I am well aware that that is not going to be your score, Michael. How many shocks are you going to give this movie?
I would probably give it 3 shock treatments out of 5.
Not such a bad movie.
The problem I have with it is, it's not a good movie. As filmmaking goes, it's not a good movie. But we're not here to discuss what's a good movie. We're on a podcast called Unloved Sequels. And we're here to show sequels that have been panned and pulled across the hot coals and look at them and go, are they that bad?
Yes.
This film is not that bad.
Yeah.
Don't go into it expecting Rocky Horror. Go into it to just look at some other nightmarish mental world that Richard O'Brien has invented. And you'll have fun with it. It is fun. It is an intriguing world. And it's really relevant today. And I think that's what's really scary with me, how relevant it is 40 years later and how the world hasn't really moved on. You know, if this film was better edited and more iconic, people will be using it as a reference point.
Absolutely. I mean, we know, it could be something that's covered in media studies courses now. And if it isn't, maybe it should be.
Yeah. You know, how
as a kind of observation of, well, it's not even an observation. It's a prediction of how the world of TV and filmmaking might end up. And it has ended up.
So if you're a media teacher at college or a film studies teacher at college or university, show your kids Shock Treatment. Yeah,
for sure.
100%.
For sure. Hey, I forgot to mention earlier my tenuous connection to the movie.
Oh,
do you want to hear
here
it?
Here we go. Go on then.
Once made Richard O'Brien a cheese and onion sandwich. That's it.
Right. In that case, I'm never going to put a Richard O'Brien film on any of our podcasts again because you're going to bring that up every single time.
How many Richard O'Brien sequels are there?
Don't know.
This is like my one shot to mention this sandwich. So
okay,
I'm taking it.
Why did you make him a sandwich?
Because I used to work at Chicken Shed Theatre many, many, many years ago. When I came out of university, I worked in the bar at Chicken Shed Theatre and he was doing some recording work there. They made a charity album and he was on the album. This is about 20 years ago. And he came in to do some recording with them and it was just after lunchtime, so the kitchen had closed, but he was hungry, so he came to the bar and he ordered a drink and asked if he could get anything to eat. And I said no, because the kitchen's closed. And he was hungry, so I said, well, I can probably make you a sandwich. So I made him a sandwich. There we go. Very rock and roll.
Wow. Very cheese. And was it cheese? Was it a Branston and a nice mature cheddar, or was it a Piccalilli?
No, it was cheese and onion. Onion, raw onion, because Richard O'Brien is weird.
That is weird. Well, isn't Miriam Margolyes likes to eat blocks of cheese with red onions, like apples? So that's kind of like, maybe it's a thing.
Well, she's also quite weird, isn't she? I mean, I love her.
I absolutely love her.
But she is bonkers in the most glorious way. But anyway, that's Shock Treatment for you. Listeners, tell us what you thought of the movie. Tell us what you thought of the episode. You can leave us a comment. You can email us on unlovedsequels@gmail.com. And you can find us on all the socials at Unloved Sequels.
So, guys, come back next week where we will have another Unloved Sequel for you. But until then, it's goodbye from me, Michael.
And goodbye from me, Claire.
And it's goodnight from everybody at the Marriage Maze. Take care, guys.
Go to sleep.